The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. It is Pope season again, where we will be selecting a new Pope. Now, I think this is quite interesting because the base of Catholicism is going a very different way to the current leadership of Catholicism. So for me, this is a fairly important bellwether moment in what direction at least one element of the global leadership goes, being leadership of 1.4 billion people. So I think it's significant. Now, this is going to be a primer on all matters popery. We are going to be covering the current situation, how the Vatican stands today, and also, of course, a bit of the classical stuff. How did we get here? Now, I don't know anything about the classical stuff, but Bo does. Hello, Bo.
Hey, all right.
Hello, Bo. Well, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, no, getting me chatting about history, even ancient history.
Yes.
Love it.
Well, there's definitely a bit of Roman stuff in here. That's definitely a bit I'd like to cover. You kind of see where I'm going with this, is that, Catholicism is in decline in Europe, very much so. It's growing like a weed in Africa, and they're very Orthodox. Latin America, it has declined a bit, but, they're still quite Orthodox. Apparently it's growing in Asia.
Just to make a differentiation between Orthodox and Catholic, because some people, when you say Orthodox, they think of...
Oh, Orthodoxy, as in traditional...
Not Eastern Orthodox, like Greek Orthodox or Russian Orthodox. Not that, right,
yeah. I mean, that might also be growing, I don't know.
In Asia, I mean, like the Philippines, I've been reading recently a fair bit, as you might imagine I would, been reading all about MacArthur, of all things. I'll do an epoch at some point about MacArthur and the war in the Pacific and he will return. And anyway, the Philippines is Catholic, big time Catholic.
Oh, big time. Very much so. Yes.
I mean, the Philippine people are sort of all different types of ethnicities, but a lot of them are sort of Chinese originally, going back centuries now, but they're sort of Chinese people. And there's been lots and lots of sort of Muslim influences. Mm. And yet, despite everything, because of the Spaniards, really.
Yes.
They're Catholic, first
and foremost.
The
Spaniards spent 400 years there, didn't they?
Yeah.
And the Spanish sailors who were stationed there didn't really have anything to do apart from the local girls. And so they've injected a lot of Spanish-ism into the country. Funnily enough, in the Philippines, I did come across a massive statue of, and get this, Cardinal Sin.
Okay.
There was literally a cardinal whose surname was Sin.
Okay.
And he's got a huge statue in Manila.
All right.
I mean, what a name.
Yeah.
I mean, I you could never promote him to Pope because you've got to keep him as a cardinal.
Yeah.
He was really popular. Well, they built a statue of him. So, yes.
Now, they've got cathedrals and stuff, haven't they, in Manila, all over the Philippines. Yeah, they're staunchly Catholic.
Yes. Right. And apparently, it's doing well in Vietnam as well and some of those other Southeast Asian countries where young professionals are turning to Catholicism. For whatever reason. Hmm. But the point, and I did say it was declining in the West, but every time you meet a Catholic in the West, they're pretty hardcore, aren't they? I mean, you don't pick Catholicism if you're going to be a wet.
It's true, yes, fair point. Yeah. I mean, the nature of Catholicism put it this way, the nature of the Church of England or Anglicanism is extremely wishy-washy, and that's not what Rome is about.
Well, I do like Catholicism for the fact that it's got a boss man. Whereas it was in Anglicanism, the Church of England stuff, you kind of have got a leader in the Archbishop of Canterbury.
But, the monarch, the king, is the head, but yeah.
Well, yeah, but he doesn't actually enforce anything, does he? He doesn't do anything. Yeah, yeah. And what you end up with is lesbian bishops. And they just go all over the place. They're just so rudderless. Well, at least with Catholicism, you've got a guy who's like, well, the last one was like, okay, now we're going to be WEF-aligned and we're going to be a bit woke. But at least you have got a boss man who can come along and say, right, no, we're sorting this out.
Yeah, Catholics, like most religions, actually. I mean, Anglicanism is something of an exception. Catholicism, like most religions, they have doctrines.
Yes.
They've actually got doctrines. There's
this
lines,
is what we believe.
There are lines in the sand.
Yes.
Yes. So yeah, I mean.
Yeah. But where I'm going with all of this is the leadership is basically, well, the majority of the cardinals, I think it's the majority, there's like, whatever, 300 of them or something, but the majority, I think, were elected, selected by Francis, who was a wokester. So the leadership is a bit woke. But what I'm saying is the base, Catholics themselves, especially young Catholics, they are traditionalist. They're more orthodoxy. They're not, you know, they're not signing up for whatever Francis was selling, basically.
Yeah.
And so for me, this is a really interesting question: is where does the Vatican go next? Does it go with what the cardinals want, which it probably will?
Well, they're the ones that get to decide
well,
who the next
that,
pontiff
yeah.
will be.
Yeah,
it's them. It's the cardinals.
Yeah.
The princes of the church.
Or will they go down the route of what the base desperately wants, which is a return to tradition?
We shall see. Who knows?
Yeah.
I've got no real insight into that. I don't know the politics of the most senior cardinals.
Well, before we dive into the history stuff, why don't we take a quick look at that? So hopefully our editor can stick up on screen this little table that I put together. So what I've got here is the top cardinal selections.
Okay.
They're betting odds. So I did a daily
of
video.
Them becoming the next pope?
Yes.
So this dude's favourite, is he?
Yes.
Okay.
Pietro Parolin. So he's favourite.
Okay.
And basically, he was the Vatican Secretary of State. So he's basically the number two behind Francis. So he's a powerful dude already. I've given him a base score of 40%, which is pretty low. So I'm taking Francis as a sort of 50. There's a, you know, around about, you know, 50-ish percent.
So he's more lefty than...
Well,
is that what you mean?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he was the action man for Francis, and he was going around, you know, enforcing this agenda. So he spent a lot of time talking about climate change and migration and stuff like that. The only reason he hasn't scored lower is because he's at least sensible on women's ordination. He just says no.
Right.
Non-negotiable. We're not doing that.
Right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Which is, I mean, as soon as you get, I'm not saying all women are bad, obviously, but the ones that have absolutely ruined the Church of England have generally been, yes.
No, it's been a tenet of theirs. Like why?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, there is pressure to change. So you got the next up is Louis Antonio Tagel. So he's from Manila that we were just talking about. He's even woker.
Oh, is he?
He only scores 30%, but he's the second favourite, close behind. So it's basically between these top two is the current thinking. So he's the Archbishop of Manila.
Okay, so the odds get much longer after these top two.
Yes.
He's likely to be one of those two dudes.
Well, that's what the betting market thinks at the moment.
Right, yeah.
And he has been described as the Asian Pope Francis, and he's been very pro-LGBTQ.
Okay.
Yeah, which... For Pope, I would suggest is not the way to go, but then I'm not Catholic, so...
It's weird, it's divisive. I heard the last Pope just gone. I've seen him described a number of different places as one of the most divisive Popes.
Yes.
Because, again, the base, your average Catholic, isn't on board with pro-LGBTQ...
Well, also divisive from...
Stuff.
Doctrine.
Yeah, all right, sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Doctrine
yeah.
and the base.
Yeah.
Yes. Then we got... Matteo Zuppi here, who is even woker. He's the third. So basically the top three, the top four, because Turkson's after. So Zuppi has praised queer families and he's done a focus on migration. So he's basically the wokest on this list, and he's number three, is Zuppi. Number four on the list is also a wokester, Turkson, who is apparently a Ghanaian. Ghanaian, and he's been focusing on climate change, social justice, and interreligious dialogue.
Of course he has.
Yes.
What? Yeah.
Yeah. But just, anyway, number, what are we on? Number five, Erdo. Now, we start getting sensible now.
Okay.
So Erdo, he's a Hungarian.
All right. Based straight away.
Yep. he's on pretty good terms with Viktor Orban.
Oh, right, okay.
I like that.
So he really is. I was joking, but he really is then.
Yeah, no, and he's been sensible on migration issues.
Okay.
And he's been quite sceptical about the progressive reforms under Francis.
Okay.
So he might even be even more based, but because he was a cardinal, Francis got rid of bishops who spoke out too much. Right. I mean, one of the bishops basically just called him a heretic, and he was like, okay, right, you're gone then. So this guy might be even more base, but because he's been a cardinal under Francis, he kind of kept his powder dry. But from what we have seen, he gets a pretty decent based score.
Okay.
Does the Hungarian. So he's probably my favourite out of this list. This one, I just love the name. Pierre Battista Pizza Baller. I really think we should have a Pope called Pizza Baller, even if he does score only 50%. He might be all right as well. I mean, he spent most of his career in the Holy Land. So, I mean, okay, by necessity, he's been doing a lot of...
Israel, you mean?
What do you mean? Yes. So he was the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem.
Oh, okay. All right.
Now, because he was there, he's focused on interfaith dialogue, but that's kind of out of necessity because you're in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
So there's not really, yeah, you kind of expect that. So I'm not 100% sure about my score for him, so I put him at 50%.
Okay.
So maybe. Oh, this guy's pretty good. Odds start getting a little bit longer now, but Robert Sarah, he's the one that attracted a lot of attention on social media. So he's from Guinea. How do you pronounce that? Yeah, Guinean?
Yeah. Something like that. Guinean,
He was basically spent most of his career resisting a Marxist dictatorship.
Nice.
Which is good.
Yeah, no, genuinely.
Yeah.
Nice.
He's been a big critic of mass immigration.
Oh, right.
Which is nice as well.
Yeah. Unusual.
Yeah. And he likes a bit of the tradition as well. You know, he's not against all the gender stuff. He calls it a threat to the family. He even advocates for traditional liturgy.
Okay.
So he gets a base score 90%. But he probably, being of a shade darker than most on this, he could probably get away with being a bit more in the face of Francis's reforms. But no, he's definitely got a very strong base score.
It would be interesting if he won it and became the Pope.
Yes.
And was really, really based or reactionary. Yeah. I don't mean that as a pejorative, but I mean Guardian would call him, I suppose, or conservative or whatever you like. And like the lefty mainstream media would attack him, but obviously he's a black fella.
Yes.
So they're going to have a bit of cognitive dissonance.
Do you remember
a black pope that's really anti-immigration?
Yes.
How are they going to square that circle?
Yeah, they're going to have problems with that, aren't they?
Yeah.
do you remember when David Lammy thought that, you know, the white and black smoke that comes out the chimney to denounce whether you got a new pope?
Yeah.
David Lammy thought that was indicating the race of the pope.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, he put a tweet out criticising it, saying, I think we should be focused on something else other than the race of the next pope.
So a tradition started,
I believe, in 1903, indicating whether we got... Because for those who don't know, they keep having these ballots, and whenever a ballot is unsuccessful, they burn them and black smoke comes out.
Yeah.
And when they've got a pope and the ballot is successful, they release white smoke. Yeah. And that way, everybody in the Vatican Plaza, whatever it's called...
That are waiting.
Yeah.
Sometimes for days, sometimes weeks.
They can see when white smoke comes out, and they know they've got a new pope, and they cheered.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I normally do my Brokenomics... basically aiming at Rachel Reeves so that she can learn something. So, Rachel, if you finally got your Brokenomics subscription, run down the hall, get David Lammy and pull him in for this one so he can learn something about the Pope. But yes, we might possibly have a black Pope, and it would probably be a good... Unless it was Turkson.
Yeah, he seems...
He's a proper wokester, but Sarah isn't too bad. Getting into slightly longer odds, we've got Mario Gambetti. At least he's an Italian, and he hasn't taken strong stances on the woke stuff, but he's signalled that way, so he gets 40%. Cristobal Lopez Romero, a Spanish chap. He's pretty woke as well. I mean, he spent most of his time in Morocco, but I mean, he's been doing a lot of woke outreach and stuff. And at the bottom, we've got another uber wokester, Jean-Claude Hollerich, Luxembourgish, or whatever, however you pronounce it. And he's been, well, he basically wants gays in the church. I mean, I'm sure there are already, but he wants that official.
So based on this, it's likely we're going to get another lefty.
Probably.
Might not, but it looks most likely.
Yeah, you've got to hope for either Sarah or Erdő, the Hungarian. Erdő, I think, would be excellent. And it would be interesting to see the name they pick as well, because the names all have significance as well. Because I believe the first one, I mean, you can tell me this, I believe the first one was Peter.
Yeah.
And nobody has picked Peter the Second out of respect.
Well, but, St. Peter's, it's the Apostle Peter. Yeah.
St. Peter, yes. Yeah, yeah. So nobody's picked Peter since, but there are certain names that become associated with different things. So if we get a Pope Pius, that would be an indication that he wants to return to tradition and orthodoxy, that kind of thing. If he picks a name like Leo, that's associated with, you know, civilizational protection.
Authority, papal authority.
Yes.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, when you pick your name as Pope, it's quite often.
It sends a message.
You're harking back to one of your favourites.
Yes.
Often. Not always.
Yes.
Not always, but.
Benedict for truth, which might, you know, in this day and age might be interpreted as no, men actually are men and women are women. So Benedict might be a good one. You can see Sarah or something going for Benedict or something. Urban, that's the one I'd really like to see.
Yeah.
Of course, associated with Crusades.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, yeah. It's the,
yeah.
Pope Urban II is the first Crusade Pope, isn't he?
Yes.
So
I'd like to see a Leo. I'd like to see a Leo or an Urban, being that Erdo chap, that Hungarian chap. I'd like to see that. And there's also Constantine, which kind of invokes renewal of Christian faith.
Mm.
So any of those names going on an Erdo or a Sarah, I think we're in good hands. But it's probably going to be a Wokester.
There's famously, there's always a lot of horse trading behind the scenes.
Yes.
So it's not, it's often, well, it can quite easily not be one that seems like the obvious pick.
Yes.
So quite often they'll think, like, this guy is the heir apparent. He's the obvious pick. He's got the College of Cardinals behind him. Mm. And he doesn't get picked.
Yes.
So you never know.
Well, that's what I'm hoping. It won't necessarily be that Pierdo bloke, the current favourite, because, you know, he is the Vatican Secretary of State, but he's also therefore had the opportunity to make enemies as well.
Right.
Which could be
a lot of politics. Yes. I mean, historically speaking, as well, going back centuries and centuries and centuries, you make all sorts of promises to get the top seat.
Yeah. Apparently, once a conclave lasted for 3 years.
Yeah. Well, it's got even more complicated than that. Sometimes. You've had a Pope voted in and then a big chunk of the cardinals don't accept it.
Oh, right.
They'll go and make a counter papacy of their own.
When you've got two popes.
Yeah, anti-popes. Three popes. Or four, at one point, there was four popes.
Right.
All running around at the same time.
Pope for every occasion.
This is like the late 14th century I'm talking about. In fact, I covered it a bit in my my recent ongoing mini-series about Henry V, the Council of Constance. You have a rival papacy in Avignon in southern France.
Yeah.
And everyone decides, well, okay, instead of these two rival popes, let's pick a third one.
Hmm. Right.
And we can all get behind that third one. And it just didn't work. So now you've just got three popes and they're all claiming to be pope.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we very slightly had a version of that recently, didn't we? Because what was it? Was it Benedict, the former pope, who stood down and resigned?
Well, the Ratzenberger figure.
Yeah, Ratzenberger. He stood down, but he was basically still living in the Vatican.
Yeah, he was a dodgy fellow, wasn't he?
I don't know, actually. I wasn't paying much attention to
the popery
back then.
I think he was. I think he resigned. Like, that's almost unheard of. It has happened before under duress. But not in modern times.
Hmm.
I'm pretty sure I probably have to use the word allegedly here to be careful.
Oh, just in case he sues you.
But I think there would have been all sorts of scandals coming out of the woodwork with him. And to avoid that, he just stepped down. Even though popes don't really resign,
Yes.
It's like resigning as president. Yeah. It has happened.
It's not something you do just to put on your CV, is
right,
it?
It's super rare.
Yeah.
Super, super rare. You're supposed to stay there till you die.
Yeah. The thing I'm thinking of in the 12th century is apparently it lasted for 3 years at one point because the Italians and the French were feuding over and they just would not give ground. And eventually the locals decided to lock them in and starve them until they picked. And they picked some poor sod who wasn't even present. He was in the Holy Land or something. And he just got a telegram one day to tell him that he's the Pope.
Right.
And that's apparently where the tradition comes from now of they just get shut in. And they can't go anywhere. They can't have their phones. They can't have any screens. Basic rations. In fact, it used to be water and bread after a few days if you didn't make a quick decision. I don't think they do that anymore. But they lock them in and they like, no, we want a fast decision. And apparently, just before the Second World War, whichever Pope that was, I forget now, but they picked him within hours. So my understanding is that between 2 and 3 weeks after the Pope dies, we get a new one, and we should find out fairly fast. So about a week after this airs, it should begin the process.
Yeah. I mean, I think once in my lifetime, if I recall properly, it was protracted. Mm. And like day after day, the black smoke keeps coming out. But mostly in my lifetime, as far as I can recall, it's pretty quick.
Yeah, mind you, there hasn't been that many, has there?
I mean, plus, it doesn't matter as much these days. If you go back to the medieval period or before, it really, really mattered. Like the Pope was one of the power players in Europe, arguably.
Or very much so in the early days, wasn't it?
Or more powerful than a king, arguably, at different times. Mm. So it really, really mattered what policy the Pope
Whereas now, not so much. Yeah.
That's the three-year
thing when the Italians and the French were fighting. But, okay, let's get into the history side of it then, because, so I know that the Pope is the Pontifex Maximus, one of the old Roman titles. And I know that the Pontifex Maximus in, like, the year zero was this pagan dude who was, like, sacrificing bulls and throwing chicken bones and keeping the Roman calendar and stuff like that. And I know that by about the year, by the 400s, you've got what I would consider to be a proper pope. I'm a bit hazy as to what happened in between that Pontifex Maximus and that Pontifex Maximus, because something crossed over there and I'm not clear on what happened.
Okay, so the ancient Roman Pontifex Maximus is different to a pope. The fact that...
Well, it is one of the pope's titles.
Well, yeah, but only since like the 15th century.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so that wasn't continuous
at all.
To
be chief pontiff, to be the vicar of Christ. There's all different names you could call the Pope.
Yes.
And since about, I think, the 15th century, they decided to start using that. So the idea of a pagan ancient Roman Pontifex Maximus is a different thing to a Pope, even though a Pope can and does call himself chief pontiff. So the ancient Roman Pontifex Maximus is the chief priest.
Yes.
The chief priest. But it was an office, usually for life, just like any other, like being a consul or a praetor or something like that. And you could bribe yourself into that. I mean, Julius Caesar was Pontifex Maximus.
Yeah, because I know it went over to being an emperor's title. So one of the things I was going to ask you is, and it sounds like this is going to be a hard no, is there any way of saying the Roman Empire lives on through the Pope?
People argue about that.
Right.
I say no.
Okay.
I say no.
Yeah. Because of that discontinuation.
I say no.
Okay.
But you can make the argument. You can make the argument, but it's a difficult one for me.
It's a tenuous.
I say no.
So how do we end up with the first pope then?
So you've got the Pontifex Maximus. By the age of Augustus, i.e. one generation after Julius Caesar, Augustus considered the first emperor, true emperor, he had then accrued everything into one person, all the powers of the consul, of the tribunate, and they take the Pontifex Maximus or put all of that into one person, me, Augustus. Okay, so there you go. So that's sort of the Roman Pontifex Maximus. The emperor ended up being the chief pontiff.
Yes.
Okay, so that's that. But then, so popes is something entirely different. If you go to the Vatican, if you go to St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, I've been there a number of times, you'll see up on the wall a big, literally written in stone, list of the popes from Peter down to today, unbroken list. Now, the real reality is that there were various breaks. Sometimes you had anti-popes running around, but nonetheless, the official line is that there's an unbroken line of popes from Peter to today.
So did they pick one of the four from that thing you were telling me earlier and just put his name in?
In the end, yeah. Right. At the Council of Constance, in 1416, 1417, or whatever it was, they, in the end, decide on one guy and keep going forward with that guy.
Okay. But Peter, he's from about the year 30-something, is he?
Right, Well, he was contemporary with Christ, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so a lot of the early popes, the very, very early popes, are, you know, their history, their historicity is a little bit shaky, like Anglo-Saxon kings during the Dark Ages. Sometimes it's little more than a name.
Yes.
They're not sort of firmly in the full light of history.
Like King Arthur, for example, yes.
So King Arthur is almost entirely fictional or an amalgam of more than one person or whatever. But sometimes they're little more than a name on a paper. But so you've got the popes. So the line of popes from Peter to today are different to the ancient Roman pagan Pontifex Maximus, although from the 15th century onwards, popes would call themselves that.
Okay, so they're just
two different things. I've also got to mention Constantine. So how did you go from the Rome, the pagan Rome of Julius Caesar and Augustus?
That's what I wanted to ask because envisaging was is that I know at some point the emperor adopted Christianity. And I just assumed at that point he picked a Christian rather than a pagan for his Pontifex Maximus. But I've got it completely wrong there.
It's not like that. Not really like that, no. So famously, it's Constantine the First.
Yes.
And we're talking the early 4th century, so the early 300s or the 330s. I think he dies in the 330s AD. Mm-hmm. But it's not it's much more complicated than that. So, I mean, after that, you've got the age of Julian, the Emperor Julian the Apostate. Being an apostate means you've renounced the faith. So Julian the Apostate.
Which faith did he renounce? Christianity or paganism?
Yeah, yeah. He went back to paganism. He's after Constantine and he goes back to paganism. So Catholics call him an apostate, or Christians call him an apostate because he took them back to paganism. But then they reverted back to Christianity.
Oh, okay.
So it's a bit of a back and forth, bit of a seesaw, but not much of one really. Yes. I mean, Julian the Apostate, you could see as a bit of a blip from the Christian point of view. But no, that the story of how you go from the age of Christ or the age of Peter to Constantine. That's a few hundred years, best part of 300 years. And it's a very long storied narrative of you go from being this small sect in Judea, small sect of heretic Jews in Judea, to being the state religion of the Roman Empire. Well, it's a long and story thing. I mean, it was, I suppose, a very, very, very short summary of it is that it became fashionable. So even in the age of Nero, Nero does a massive persecution of Christians. Some blamed the Great Fire of Rome that happened during Nero's reign on the Christians. Tacitus explicitly says
it popular?
Well, it just became, like anything else, really, it just became the rich and famous. The rich and powerful people, it was like an avant-garde, edgy thing. It makes the mainstream and then it blows up.
So I thought that they were sort of putting Christians to death in the Colosseum.
Well, they were, yeah, to begin with, right. Yeah.
But that's in the earlier bit. And then they get bored of that and the rich people who want to be a bit edgy, they think, okay, let's do this Christian stuff.
So like it's an underground, it's like sort of an underground cult.
Right.
A type of cult among many in the Roman world in the 1st-2nd century AD.
It was
a mystery cult. It was one of the mystery cults, like Mithraism.
What were some of the other ones then?
Mithraism.
Mithraism.
Yeah, there's a god called Mithras.
Right.
There's loads of them. There's like the cult of Isis, an Egyptian cult.
Oh, right.
And sometimes, depending on the Roman emperor, sometimes they'll sort of turn a blind eye to it. Mm. Sometimes they will like try and stamp it out.
Right.
Judaism, for example, sometimes it was sort of allowed, sort of freely allowed to be Jewish in Rome, and other times, and like maybe Titus or Hadrian, they'd persecute you.
Right.
So you go ups and downs, peaks and troughs in their favourability within Rome. But at a certain point, it becomes kind of fashionable. Right. And the persecutions tail off. So you're not going to be absolutely arrested. So in the Roman period, the first, second century AD, the Romans would say things like, look, you're allowed to be a Christian, but you must also at least pay lip service to the cult of the Roman emperor. And particularly okay. Christians and Jews would say, no, we can't do that. There's one God. We
Hang
can't...
on, why? No. I render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. I mean, well, why can't you do that?
Well, because the early Christian martyrs refused to. They say, no, there is one God, and there's Jesus, and there's one word.
Okay.
And we can't worship Caesar, the Roman emperor, whoever he is.
Okay, fair enough.
We can't. And the Romans quite often, very often, in fact, if you believe people like Zosimus or Tertullian or whoever, or Edward Gibbon, quite often the Roman authorities would say, look, just throw us a bone here, just pretend. You don't even actually have to really believe it in your heart. Just say it. Just sign this bit of paper. We don't care if you really believe it. We don't want to throw you to the lions. And they're like, no, I'd rather be a martyr. No, martyr me then. They get really hard line about it.
I was going to say that's the Roman Empire negotiating from a position of weakness, coming it across like that.
Often,
but if they were
often.
Dealing with absolute headbangers like that, who are like, yeah, no, I'm not going to even lie to you in order to avoid being eaten by a lion. I mean, I would lie to avoid being eaten by a lion.
Most people would.
If you would like to see the full version of this premium video, please head over to lotuseaters.com and subscribe to gain full access to all of our premium content.